Chapter 6 Fairy Tale Logic. Summary. Foggy has a surprise for Matt. Foggy, just because you spun me around 3 times before we walked here doesn't mean I don't know this is the library, Matt said, laughing as Foggy pushed him up some stairs ahead of him. I don't know what you're talking about, Foggy said smugly, before launching into his usual theatrics. Why would I take you to the library when we're on an adventure? Can you not feel the heat from the torches ensconced along these very walls? They cast a sinister shadow upon our party. What lies in wait for us, who are not but 2 naive young swashbucklers? Matt stifled another snicker. His hand found the stairway railing, and he continued his ascent blindfolded. Like the spinning, it was another of Foggy's nonsensical stipulations. In the few days since Matt's dalliance with Todd, he'd found it surprisingly easy to slip back into his normal routine thanks to Foggy and his relentless cheer. It'd become clear that Foggy'd been planning something. The out-of-nowhere question about Matt's favorite cake flavor, furtive muttering, and proximity of Matt's birthday all tipping him off. With a friend to remind him how lucky he was just to exist by his side, it was difficult to stay wallowing. In fact, Matt's swift change in attitude had reinvigorated the pragmatic part of his brain, and he'd even worked up a plan B regarding his epistaxis anime. While the Dr. Collins from the court case appeared to have passed away, he'd managed to track down an address for the woman who had sued him. As fate would have it, he was planning on paying one Linda Peretti a visit the very next day to ask her what he'd done wrong in his search for a cure. His spirits couldn't be higher as he and Foggy trekked up the library stairs to, what was for him at least, an unknown destination. When they reached the 5th landing, Foggy told him to stand by. He waited while Foggy pulled out a jangly set of keys Matt didn't recognize, looked carefully through them, and then fitted one into the lock of the closed door they'd stopped in front of. Aha! Foggy cried over the door's creaky hinges. Matt followed him into another, narrower stairwell filled with stagnant air. Where did you get those keys? He asked curiously. I tricked the guardsmen with my roguish wiles, Foggy said, the various plastics of the snacks he'd stashed in his backpack jostling together with each of his steps upward. Okay. Actually, I just dropped your name to Ms. Sekiguchi. You know, if you're into older women, I think she might cougar for you. Is that a verb? Matt interjected. It is now. Anyway, as soon as I said it was a surprise for you, she forked them over. But that's neither here nor there, Foggy said, getting back into character. For we have entered the tallest turret of the castle. The wind whips about outside, and a cold draft cuts straight through the stone walls. We shiver, pull our cloaks tighter around us. We can't shake the feeling that even beyond the chill lies a dangerous magic. Traces of it crackle like electricity hovering just above our skin. Foggy paused in his monologue to deal with another locked door. Matt wasn't sure, at first, whether Foggy's description had bled into his own perception of things, but after double-checking, he confirmed that cooler air was indeed leaking in from the other side. This had to be the entrance to the roof, which explained the need for keys. Foggy turned to Matt, his hand on the doorknob. Are you prepared to step through this portal? All your training has led you to this moment. But if you're scared... Matt smacked Foggy in the leg with his cane. How could I be scared with my scrappy traveling companion here beside me? Open the door. Let us face the elements. Oh, now someone's getting into it, Foggy said approvingly, then swung open the door. He untied Matt's blindfold for him just past the threshold. Behold, the night sky. But not just any night sky, no. 'Tis a full moon, a blood moon, engorged with the power of prophecy. They moved to a spot near the center of the roof, where Foggy unzipped his backpack, rummaged around noisily inside it, and took out a crinkly, tightly rolled object. He unfurled it and spread it on the ground. A tarp, he explained. The ceremonial ground cover. Seat yourself there while I lay out the ritual objects. "Pray tell, good sir," Matt said, as he got to his knees and set down his cane on the edge of the tarp. "What rites are we to perform?" Foggy removed a box from his bag and placed it in front of Matt. He then scrounged about in the bag's pocket for some plastic silverware. Handing Matt a fork, he said, "It is time, young Matthew, for your coming-of-age ceremony." Matt raised an eyebrow. "At 22? "It's the age you come into your sorcerer powers," Foggy said, not missing a beat. He popped open the box, and the scent of chocolate cake that had already been emanating from it intensified. "But first, you must prove yourself worthy in a challenge. Demonstrate to all those who would call you unfit for such power that you can defeat this piece of cake in battle." "I think I can handle that." Grinning from ear to ear, Matt was about to take his first stab at the cake when Foggy interrupted him. "Wait, fuck, pause, I forgot the hats." "The hats?" Matt repeated. Foggy returned from his backpack with two semi-crushed paper party hats and handed one off to Matt to put on. "Chin strap and everything, huh?" Matt said, as he tugged the elastic under his chin. "Gotta love the dollar store. Lots of occult doohickeys, you know. Okay, action. Destroy that cake, and I shall engage in my own battle for solidarity." They both dug into the cake, which Foggy had apparently gotten from a local bakery. Matt meant to savor his, but trying to keep from shoveling it into his mouth was a losing proposition. It was just too good. He and Foggy finished their pieces at around the same time and discarded their forks on the messy remains of the box. Matt leaned back onto his wrists in contentment. "Thank you, Foggy. That was delicious." "You did well," Foggy said. "I have consulted with the oracles, and they say you made a good showing against the cake. They find you worthy." Matt wiped imaginary sweat from his brow. "Phew. I couldn't have done it without you, though, buddy. You are the Samwise to my Gamgee." He paused, then with a great deal of self-satisfaction said, "Those were the two little elves, right?" Foggy mimed getting shot in the chest, complete with a cry of anguish. "You wound me, my brother. Don't think I won't force you to sit through the extended edition all over again," he warned. Dragging his backpack closer to him, he said, "But the ceremony is not yet over. Every new sorcerer is assigned a guardian deity to watch over them." Matt tilted his head. He had much less of an idea as to where this thread of Foggy's fantasy scenario was leading, although, like everything else, it appeared to have its source in his seemingly bottomless backpack. "I hope you like it," Foggy said, more subdued than he had been, as he gave Matt what Matt now realized was his birthday present. Matt took the object, which was unwrapped, and examined it with his fingers. It was plastic, molded into a humanoid shape, but with enough points of divergence to make it instantly recognizable. The shell, for one, pointed to a certain reptile, and the tiny nunchaku dangling from its hand provided Matt with the last piece of the puzzle. "You got me, Michelangelo?" "In all his teenage ninja glory." "But that's not all. I got myself a figure, too. Donatello, in honor of, you know," Foggy laughed. He took the other action figure out of his bag and passed it to Matt for comparison. "I know it's kind of weird that half of your present is for me, but think of it like friendship bracelets. They're a pair, like us," he finished quietly. "Like us." As Matt echoed Foggy's words, heat crept up behind his nose, but for once it wasn't a sign of bloody things to come. Instead, all that happened was his heart squeezed in his chest, and tears threatened his eyes, and his throat ached a little. He was touched, barely managing to keep his voice even when he said, "I love it, Foggy. Thank you." Taking his Donatello back, Foggy cleared his throat. "Roommates till the end," he said, chuckling awkwardly. Matt forced out an answering chuckle. He must have looked too sincere, and now Foggy was dialing it back, reminding him where they stood. How easily Matt forgot, whenever he was alone with Foggy, that his friend had someone else. Still, though, that Foggy had gone out of his way to make Matt's birthday special meant he did care, and Matt would hold on to that. He hadn't lost everything to Marcy. Foggy straightened out his legs where he was sitting and crossed his ankles. "Well, that's all the festivities I had planned," he said. But I did bring some Cheetos and potato chips to tide us over if you wanted to stay up here for a bit and soak up the moonlight. Yeah, sure, Matt said. Then he asked, is it really a full moon? I may have embellished a little, Foggy admitted. Artistic license and whatnot. It's more like 3/4. But don't worry, it didn't affect your coming of age at all. You should have full powers. Oh, good. That was my main concern. Matt slapped Foggy's shin playfully. How else would I pass Gallows class? Oh, come on, Foggy said, ripping into the bag of Cheetos. As if you're not already blowing the rest of us out of the water. You've got to use your powers for more interesting stuff. Like what? Matt cautiously dipped a hand into the Cheetos and pulled out one of the twisted cheese puffs. He'd always resented them and their tenacious residue, but perhaps it was time to give them another chance. He popped the Cheeto into his mouth and chewed it while Foggy answered, well, ethical concerns aside, don't you ever wish you could, like, check in on what someone's thinking? What, you mean like mind reading? Technically, yeah, Foggy hedged. But I don't mean that I'd want to hear their every inner thought. Sometimes I just want to be sure, you know, that I'm not fucking things up. Foggy, what? It's not really important. It's not like I couldn't be an adult and just ask. Foggy waved a hand. There are better powers anyway, like talking to animals or always having exact change. So, what's it gonna be, Murdoch? Matt didn't miss Foggy's passing of the question back to him for the evasive maneuver that it was, but if he wasn't keen on talking about his insecurities, Matt wasn't going to pressure him. He thought for a moment before settling on an answer himself. All right, then I want infinite clean dishes. Right after I finish eating, they're clean again, no effort on my part, and no more waiting on Jared to get out of the kitchenette. He sure takes his time, doesn't he? Yeah. Matt found himself reaching for more Cheetos. They weren't so bad, at least in Foggy's company. Speaking of Jared, Foggy said, his words aimed downward as he dipped his head. He continued haltingly. Okay. Maybe that's the wrong way to bring this up. Starting over with what might seem like a hard pivot, but I promise it's going somewhere. Foggy steadied himself with a deep breath. So you've probably, worked out that I'm bi or whatever. Some Cheeto dust caught in Matt's throat and he coughed. He was about to reevaluate his stance on the snack food for the second time in as many minutes. He hadn't expected the night, which had hardly been grounded in realism until Foggy's confession, to take such a revelatory turn. If they were telling secrets, Matt wished he could return the favor. But when he finally told Foggy the truth about his crush on him, he wanted to be on the other side of his epistaxis anime and free to act on it. Any declaration of love would have to wait another couple of days at the earliest. So he let Foggy go on saying whatever it was he was working up to without interrupting him, even when his next words gave him pause. And I don't want to assume anything, but, Jared said he saw you leave Todd's with a skip in your step the other day, and... Matt's heart pounded in his ears. His head spun. Where was Foggy going with this? How much did Foggy know? He couldn't have found out about Matt's epistaxis anime, could he? Or his crush on Foggy? Or both? I guess I'm just saying that if there's anything you'd like to know, I mean... I doubt the nuns were really equipped to talk to you about safe sex. Not that I have a ton of experience, but, yeah, I've got your back. It took Matt a second to adjust to the reality of what Foggy was saying. It made sense for him to assume that Todd had been a regular hookup, one motivated by sexual desire, and not a shot in the dark at curing his illness. Matt was in the clear. Foggy still didn't know the mechanics behind his nosebleeds. He wasn't thrilled, however, that Foggy had found out about Todd. He'd hoped to avoid muddying the waters regarding how he felt about Foggy. And, although the only direct consequence so far seemed to be that he was in danger of being given the talk by the very person with whom he most wanted to do the things contained therein, it wasn't ideal. Nevertheless, there was one benefit to this turn of events. Matt had finally gotten confirmation that Foggy's childhood lust for Donatello had been at least in part related to his manly qualities. He could now rest easy, knowing the turtle question had been solved and that he had a chance. Turning his Michelangelo over in his hands, Matt laughed as he finally came around to the comedy of the situation. Oh, okay, yeah, thanks, Foggs. I'll let you know if I ever need a demo with a condom and a banana. Fine, laugh all you want, Foggy said sagely, but bananas may just be the unsung heroes of human sexual health. My offer stands. I'll let you know, Matt repeated, still snickering, and despite himself, went for another Cheeto. I've never been a great hostess, sorry. A glass of tap water, no ice, came down on the hardwood table in front of Matt, where he was seated in Linda Peretti's kitchen after being let in a few minutes previously. He extended a hand and pulled it closer, grateful for the excuse not to keep his hands in his lap like a child in for a scolding. Something about the woman suggested the words, "make yourself at home," comprised the first half of a precautionary tale rather than an invitation, and Matt could feel himself reverting to a level of reserve he hadn't been since before the nuns had ceased to scare him. He hoped she wasn't planning on keeping him for long. "So," Ms. Peretti barked, after Matt had said his thanks for the water and as she leaned back against the counter, tapping her acrylic-reinforced nails on its edge. "You're a bleeder, huh?" Matt had barely gotten out an affirmative yes before she steamrolled onward. "And you've come to me thinking that I hold the secret to plugging you up for good, I assume." "That's what I was hoping," Matt admitted, although he was pretty sure he'd explained as much on the phone the other day. He took a sip of his water so as not to be rude and waited for her to indicate whether or not she intended to be forthcoming. He couldn't conceive of a reason she'd have for inviting him over if that wasn't the case, but Matt really didn't know what to expect. She hadn't thus far been acting as if they shared any great kinship. "Look, what you have to understand is that you're not the first one to come sniffing around." Ms. Peretti grabbed a pack of cigarettes from behind her on the counter and tapped one out into her palm. "Young journalist wannabes looking to revive an old story. Where is she now? That kind of crap. I'll tell you straight out, I don't need it. I'm done with the public eye. I've done my time." "Ms. Peretti, I need assurances," she said, pausing to light the cigarette and take her first drag, "that you're not mixed up with those little twerps, that Karen and the one who styles herself after a PI. Matt shook his head, brow furrowed. "I don't know whoever those people are." "Easy to say, hard to prove," she said, unimpressed. Matt was at a loss. How was he supposed to convince her he was who he said he was? Did she expect him to whip up a nosebleed on the fly? Leaving aside the fact that Foggy was a whole borough away, Matt had spent so much time and energy trying to curb his nosebleeds that, even if he'd never actually succeeded, his instincts railed against any attempt at the opposite. "I don't think I'm comfortable forcing a nosebleed in front of you. Sorry," he said, frowning. "Well, who the hell asked you to do that?" Ms. Peretti took another drag on her cigarette impatiently. "What have you got in your bag? You have an ID for that school that's not NYU? A bloody handkerchief? Well?" Matt suppressed the urge to facepalm. Of course, a literal demonstration wasn't the only way to corroborate his story. Unwittingly, though it had been, Matt had brought something just as good as proof with him. It seemed he'd be forever indebted to Foggy for his innovative thinking with the tampons. Not many young men carried tampons around, and even fewer pre-cut the ones they had to a size more befitting a nostril. He bent over to reach the backpack he'd stashed at his feet when he sat down, and dug around in the front pocket, first for his wallet, and then for the discreet cloth bag he stored the emergency tampons in. He handed Ms. Peretti his Columbia ID so she could inspect it, while he shook out the bag of tampons on the table. "For my nose," he explained. Ms. Peretti placed Matt's ID down on the table next to him with a snap as she came in closer to look at the tampons. "That'll do," she said, and pulled out a chair on the left side of the table to sit in. She slid an ashtray toward her before speaking again. Run your situation by me one more time. There's a girl? A boy, actually, Matt said. I'm not sure I'm really all that into girls, he mumbled, realizing he'd been so wrapped up in Foggy that he'd never bothered to poke too hard at this larger question. Listen, kid, do I look like your therapist or your mom? I don't care about your sexuality crisis. So there's a boy. She waved him on vigorously enough that sent a cloud of cigarette smoke through Matt's gaping mouth and straight down his windpipe. As he tried not to choke, it was hard not to see it as a metaphor for how he couldn't seem to stop running into walls in this conversation. Every step she urged him to take forward was accompanied by some sort of hazard. Matt coughed lightly before saying, Right. And every time I get too close to him, I get a bloody nose, which, as I'm sure you know, makes life a bit difficult. Mm-hmm, Ms. Peretti nodded. Anyway, I was looking up whether there was a cure when I found out about your lawsuit. I tried what the doctor said, you know. I had sex, but it didn't work. I still get nosebleeds, so I'm not sure what I did wrong. Matt smiled hopefully in Ms. Peretti's direction. Uh-huh, she said, tapping her fingernails on the table twice. Well, I'm sorry to disappoint, but if you've had sex with him and it didn't clear things up, you've either deluded yourself into thinking he's the one when it's someone else, or you've got yourself a problem far above my pay grade. She leaned back on her chair, the hand holding her cigarette outstretched to rest on the edge of the ashtray. Matt tilted his head in confusion. Clearly he'd missed something. What did she mean by the one, and why had she assumed he'd had sex with Foggy, when it would obviously be far less hassle to do it with someone who wasn't guaranteed to trigger a biblical plague and flood all in one? Unless it had to be him. Matt couldn't believe he was about to apply Disney fairy tale logic to real life, but what if the curse of his disease could only be lifted by true love and its consummation? He caught himself about to smile at the thought of Prince Foggy, when he remembered where he was and who he was talking to. He still needed answers, and to get them he'd have to ask questions, embarrassing though they might be. He wasn't about to jump straight to airing the finer details of his theory without more proof, though, so he chose a less fantastical wording. You're not saying it only works if you have sex with a specific person, are you? He asked tentatively, bracing himself for another sarcastic response. Ms. Peretti sighed. Oh, kid, she groaned. What did you think, I was celibate during my marriage? If going around with my ex-husband would have fixed things, I wouldn't have ever been in a position to file that lawsuit. So it is like true love's kiss, Matt couldn't stop himself from saying in wonder, earning a short, sharp cackle from the woman across from him. If it helps you to think like that, sure, kid. But real life is a bit more complicated. I loved my ex-husband. I really did. I wasn't trapped in some loveless marriage when the nosebleeds reared their ugly head, but I also felt something undeniable for the guy who gave them to me. She puffed on her cigarette. I can tell you're not going to leave here satisfied till you know how it works, so I'll lay it out for you the same way the doc laid it out for me, give or take a few words of jargon. Matt leaned in closer, his forearms pressed against the table, and his hands circling his glass. She was right. He had come here for this as much as to figure out how to stop it. The human brain is a powerful thing, as all sorts of control over our bodies. Some of us, those with epistaxis anime, are genetically predisposed to getting nosebleeds when certain psychological conditions are met. For most people, unresolved attraction isn't a big deal. Maybe they get blue balls for a while, but they move on. For us, we repress our attraction so hard our capillaries literally burst. From there, it's the snake eating its own tail, so long as the initial attraction doesn't fade. Why wouldn't you repress it if it's going to lead to a mess? In my case, I think the catalyst was fear of infidelity. I don't know what it was for you, but it doesn't matter. If its target is that guy you like, sleeping with him should signal to your body and your brain that attraction is finally resolved. That's the cure. Oh, Matt said. He spun his glass around slowly with his fingertips, head swimming with this new information. He'd been so close to fixing his problem, but had failed on a technicality. Todd was no Foggy, and that distinction was more important than he'd realized. He now had a catch-22 on his hands, however. Foggy was his cure, but he remained out of reach so long as Matt's nosebleeds prevented him from making a move. Matt's insides squirmed at the thought. He hoped that, as someone who had gone through with it herself, Ms. Peretti could offer him some advice. How did you... I mean, I feel like I'd bleed out if I tried it with him. And that's assuming the blood wouldn't be a problem for him, and that he likes me back. Ms. Peretti shrugged, the fabric on her blouse rubbing together. You might need to get creative with the foreplay. I'm sure your little tampon friends can help you out. But it shouldn't take too long before your body realizes what's happening. My main suggestion, though? Tell your partner what's going on. If there's anything I regret, it's all the secrecy. She stood up, suddenly. All right, that's about all the wisdom I have to impart, and I'm meeting Stan for dinner in a few. Stan, Matt said, getting up too. Is he the one you... Fuck? Yeah, she said, stubbing out her cigarette in the ashtray. How's that for true love? End chapter 6.